Welcome, everybody. Brother Goodwin here, Prophecy in the Spotlight. I want to read something to you from the Bible, 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 3. Let no man deceive you by any means, for that day shall not come except there come a falling away first, and that man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. That's the Antichrist. The Bible here is talking about what we call apostasy. That falling away here is the great apostasy. I wrote a book on that, and she'll put this up later, but I'll just let's see it here. Many of you have this already. We're going to be discussing apostasy in today's program. And I want you, we got a special guest in the studio. I'm going to introduce him to you in just a moment. So stand by. Hey, welcome everybody, Protestant Spotlight. I'm Brother Dan Goodwin, your host, and this is not Dr. Hiltabill, is it? And this is Brother Tony Edmonds, and Doc is not with us today. Doc has actually got pretty bad flu. Pray for him. Of course, by the time this airs, he'll probably be fine, so not sure it's worth even saying, but pray for Doc. But we've got Brother Tony, your associate pastor over at Victory Baptist Church, Carterville,
correct.
Illinois.
Yes, sir.
45-minute drive, something
about
like that?
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
right
from here. My daughter goes there, Sarah. Yes, my daughter, Sarah, yeah. she'll want her name on TV. So her and her husband, Michael, who was a member of your church when they met.
Yeah, he's son in the faith to me. I consider Mike very important in my life.
And don't tell your pastor I said this, but you're one of the churches that we, Doc and I, both feel is one of the better churches in the country.
Praise the Lord.
We love your church. And my wife and I, when we come there, I love Brother Augur's preaching. I love to sit there and listen to him. He's just down to earth.
He is,
And he preaches.
Yes,
I like it. I like. You look around the audience there. You got young people. You got middle class. You got families. Young men.
Yes.
You got it all. There's still, of course, old people as well. But
yes, sir.
Good, well-rounded, energetic, enthusiastic church.
Yes. Yes, sir.
So, real quickly, Brother Tony, tell them just briefly how long you've been there and what you do at the church.
Well, I'm the assistant pastor. My main job title would be the youth pastor, but I've got a lot of the young men that help do a lot of the heavy lifting with that. I've been there for coming up on 40 years here this November of this year at the very first service. And Pastor Rick Dawson was the one that established the church there. And so he was kind of my father in the faith. And he went to be with the Lord back in 2018. But,
mm-hmm.
So I've been at Victory the whole time. Then Pastor Augur took over in 2008. And so I've been his assistant pastor now for going on 16 years. So,
okay, so Pastor Augur is—he's the pastor there.
Yes, sir.
And you're one of the assistants, and
yes,
I believe there's another one, Brother Kyle.
Sir. Kyle Smith.
We've
yes,
had
sir.
Him on before,
yes,
sometime
yeah.
back.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys hold up the hands of the pastor,
yes,
basically.
Sir. Yes, sir.
And what else do you do there? You work with the youth, but you there's something else you do.
The Christian school, but the other big one, I guess, would be our institute. I'm one of the teachers there in the institute there at the church. Has been just, a major influence on the church as a whole and
so
the future of the church.
Do you oversee it?
Actually, I guess on paper, Brother Kyle would be the one that oversees it.
Okay.
So between he, myself, and another one of the men there, Ron Shediak, who's actually a pediatrician, but one of the best Bible teachers, I would put him up against anybody. But so between the three of us, we do the majority of the teaching there at the institute.
So in case folks aren't sure what an institute is, it's like a Bible college, but it's different,
yes,
isn't it?
Yes, sir. I always kind of liken it to a lot of times in Bible college, and this is kind of a generalization. They have a tendency to, it's more of a broad aspect. I think there's sometimes a little bit of a tendency to teach about the Bible as much as teach the Bible. And we are strictly It's just strictly Bible. There are a couple practical classes that I would do for youth ministry and some church ed and things like that. But it is just for it's Bible to help yep. the church become more solid for the Lord.
Okay. And how long has the Institute been there?
Oh, that is a good question. So I guess we're going on 10, 12 years, I guess.
And is it pretty much an in-house thing or churches of like faith?
For the most part. Churches of like faith, we've got a few students that come there. But primarily, pastor's vision is for he wants to build Victory Baptist Church for the next generation and the next generation to make sure we've got folks there. Mike would be one of those young men who came through our institute.
My daughter's husband,
yes, yeah. Yeah. And so he would be one of those guys when I'm dead and gone and up in glory. The victory would still go on for these men who have been trained, and hopefully we'll stick to that stuff.
And I believe
and continue it.
You're 57. Is that what you said?
I'll be 57 here in a month.
Okay. So, yep. So I got a few years on you.
Yes. But,
so you've been around a while. You've been at this church quite a while.
Yes, sir.
So this topic of apostasy, I think, is going to be right down your alley here.
Unfortunately,
in my book, The End Time Apostasy, I kind of define some things here. I want you to hear this, and I want to get your take on this. You may want to add something to this, but I went to Webster's 1828. The word falling away is where we get that word apostasy. Right. So I looked up apostasy in Webster's 1828, and he said, an abandonment of what one has professed. A total desertion or departure from one's faith or religion. And then I wrote this. Basically, apostasy is turning away from the truth. The Bible indicates that before the rapture and the revealing of the Antichrist, there will be a great apostasy or falling away of the church on earth. More evidence of this is the condition of the church of the Laodiceans in Revelation 3, which is the church that exists right before the rapture,
yes,
which takes place Revelation 4:1, the rapture. And I made this comment here. The church of the Laodiceans is not just a symptom of a problem, but a sign of the end of an age, the church age. And then I get into the root of apostasy and what it's all about. All apostasy begins with a departure from the Word of God. That's the root of it all right there. Is there anything you disagree with there or anything you want to add to any of that?
I would agree with that, you know, and it's kind of interesting. I remember I was probably junior high, you know, I grew up in fundamentalism in the kind of the height there in the 70s, and and I have a very vivid memory of a preacher getting up, and he does the illustration where have the guy up there, he's the world, and the church is here, and as the world moves, the church moves, and I can remember as a young man thinking, well, that'll never happen to us. You know, we are going to, you know, as independent Baptists or as Bible believers, we're just going to stick by the stuff, and now looking back, over 50 years of being born again, it's a little,
you know,
sobering.
I don't remember what book it is, but I share something similar but a little different take that I got, and it is this. I think we blame the world for the church moving. I think the church has moved,
yes, sir,
and therefore the world around us has moved. We complain about how bad the world is.
Yes, sir.
The problem is we're the mirror that they're looking at, and as the church drifts, the world around it doesn't get the influence,
yes,
and they drift, and after a while we're complaining. We think that they're changing us, and I'm not saying that in some instances there is some influence there, but we need to be influencing them.
That's exactly right.
I remember the early days on my bus route in Chicago when I was in Bible college. Even the gangs respected us. Oh, I'm sorry, preacher. I didn't mean to say that word. And it's not that way anymore.
Changed.
It's not that way anymore.
That's one of those things that has changed.
Yeah.
Sure.
And apostasy. So from your perspective, how would you look at a church and determine what are the things that you look at dealing with apostasy?
I would say, you know, I think when we talk about apostasy, we're talking about, I think your definition is spot on. It's we're leaving the Bible. And so I think the symptoms manifest themselves often in what I would term as worldliness. You know, because we've stepped away from the Bible, well, something took its place.
Mm-hmm.
Something's taken its place. And so many churches have, you know, kind of the Burger King, you know, have it your way. And so they'll adopt things from the world that would appeal, you know, that there, you know, of course, a lot of discussion can be had about, you know, numbers and is this a work of God and what does a work of God look like? But I think so many times we will sacrifice biblical doctrine on the altar of, hey, we want to have a work that looks like a form of godliness. That is exactly what it is. And so they want a form of godliness, but it's not God's nowhere.
And right along that same line, don't we want to, we think we have to lower our standard before people will come to us yes. and come to our church or join
yes,
us.
Sir.
We think
yes,
that we got to have their music to reach the kids.
Yes, sir.
And it certainly can't be true.
Yes, sir. I've preached against rock music specifically as a youth pastor forever, and you know one of the greatest tools that Satan has used is CCM and the world's music, and the church how it's adopted it, and look the believer who's you know in his 70s been born again he's okay maybe it doesn't affect him okay. But I've got a 13-year-old sitting in my church, in my teen service, mm-hmm. and we're playing the, you know, you step into that room and it looks like any other pop rock concert. That young person is going to associate, well, if this is okay, well, there's no difference.
Yeah.
It looks the same, sounds the same. You know, you maybe throw Jesus in a lyric, maybe not,
yeah.
you know. And so the lines become blurred, and it becomes so Satan picks them off so easily, you know, and that is just a travesty of what has happened in our churches.
My next thing that I would ask, we got the what down. We know what apostasy is. Why is it creeping in all of our churches? And I picked you because I love your church. My daughter's there. We visit there when we come do recordings like we're doing today. We'll go to my daughter's, which is an hour past here, and we'll go to your church on the weekends.
Yeah.
And is there something different there? And it's worth the trip. But why are churches going into apostasy? Thoughts on that?
That's a really good question. Yes, sir. I look at pastors and we kind of, you know, they're very similar to what our football quarterbacks would be. Okay. They get blamed for a lot of the things they probably shouldn't, and they probably get credit for some of the things they probably shouldn't be getting credit for.
As well, right? I never thought of the quarterback analogy.
So they're probably, you know, I can speak for Victory. When Pastor Dawson started the church, there were about seven or eight families, and these people were solid. So the flock is solid.
Yeah.
They had some Bible background. So when Pastor Dawson was obviously, you know, kind of the old school.
He didn't start the church.
He did start the church.
Okay.
Yes. But there were about seven or eight families. Mine was one of them that started with him. And so, you know, I often think what that church plant would have looked like without those solid families.
Yeah, because whether he would admit it or not, they helped form his stand.
Yes, for sure.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, talking about Victory specifically, I think that has, that foundation was so fundamental. And it's, you know, I think a lot of times, okay, I'll take me, I'm you know, 17, 18 years old. This church is starting. I'm looking around. What's Christianity look like? You know, what is that supposed to be? How am I supposed to act? What am I supposed to do? What am I not supposed to do? So I'm looking at these other believers as well as my pastor, obviously. But when you've got, you know, kind of Joe Snuffy in the third row there that is just as sold out to the Lord and soul wins and lives a holy life, that has huge impact on
now,
people
like
me.
And if the pastor had come out in Bermuda shorts and a T-shirt to preach,
I'm sorry,
the people would have had a problem with that.
Yes, oh yeah, for sure. Yeah, that wouldn't have. They would not have been a part of that church.
Now, I think we touched on this thing about why does it apostatize? And we touched on it a little bit earlier. It just seems like we want to be liked by the world. We want them to We want people to want to come and sit in our church, listen to our music, hear our preaching, our tea. Is that part of the problem, that we're giving in because we think we have to reach people?
Yeah, without a doubt. I this is a pretty common theme in my preaching to the teens. I hammer my preacher boys with this, and adults as well. I think the greatest lie that Satan uses against our types of churches is, because if you're going to take a stand, the gap between the world and that stand is getting wider and wider. And there is I think of young people in their 20s and 30s, there is just an incredible pull to have what I call the normal life. Okay? They don't want that crazy Christianity. They don't want to be as crazy as how I would live and all my standards and all those things. And so Satan tells them, hey, you can have Jesus, but Jesus ends up being right there next to girl softball. Or hunting or whatever it is. And so we put Christ in a place that nobody wants to kick him out. And so Satan comes along and says, hey, you just got to be normal, not stand out. And so, here's the lie is, the bars will be full of normal people this weekend. Adultery will be committed by normal people this weekend. And so the lie, somehow they believe that they can have the world and not, be put on, whether, then every individual is going to be different, whether it's just cowardly or they just love the world like Demas, whatever it is. But that pull to just not stand out and be this radical Christian has strong appeal, and it's gotten our churches.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that was interesting. You said the divide between the world and the church has grown.
Yes.
So we look worse than we used to look.
We do.
I mean, in the 50s,
yeah.
I mean, look at television, Leave It to Beaver.
Yes, sir.
They came to the dinner table with a jacket and tie on.
Yes, sir.
I mean, the world dressed like God's people did in those days.
You could be a Christian and it not be quite as
obvious.
As obvious, yeah. Yes, sir. One of the interesting things, this has happened in my time of youth ministry. Around Valentine's, I preach a pretty passionate message about immorality. So I'll go after fornication, any type of sexual sins and things. And I don't remember exactly what year it was, but we have several bus kids that we end up ministering to as well. And I can remember preaching on fornication and having children out of wedlock. And I remember the looks on their faces. Once upon a time, there was often shame or even, rebellion. There is literally a look of, I've never heard this. What are you talking about? This is normal. I've never heard anything like that. And so the change in our society that children out of wedlock and you're just going to have sex when you're a teenager is just normal. My sister's going to have a baby with her boyfriend is normal for these kids. Mm. And so I'm preaching on this, and it's literally something foreign. Whereas when I started 24 years ago, they may have been in the sin, but they knew, and there was guilt, and there was shame, and they were trying to, look like, it's not me type of things. And so that divide has definitely gotten
and that's big. Where us preachers, we need the power, we need the Spirit of God, we need God.
Yes.
When you preach something that's so foreign to them,
yes, sir.
Only the Holy Spirit can plant that seed there.
Yes, sir.
Well, I've been dying for this real important question, and we're going to hit this next. But, folks, we sure appreciate all of you that watch our program. Thank you for those of you who partner with us and support us. We would not be here without the gifts of God's people. That's a fact. We live month to month, and we have no surplus. We have no jets at home in the airport. We have no fancy car. Doc and I don't even get a salary. We barely make it. And we've been here over 3.5 years now, and it's because of you. So if you can help, if God has touched your heart today, I guess everything is scrolling there. The Prophecy and Spotlights and the 800 number is there. Contact us, and we'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to have you join us as a partner of our ministry here so that we can do what we're doing. And God bless you. Here's what I've been dying to ask. This is one of the main things I wanted to ask you. How important is the pastor in terms of holding back apostasy? How important is his role?
You can put a lot of blame on a lot of the problems. And in fact, I'm one that often, you know, when churches have issues, a lot of times I will point to the flock. You know, they just are, you know, whatever. They've gotten their hearts and they're going to do what they want to do. But when you look at apostasy, I don't know how you don't put the lion's share of the blame on our preachers.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you can't do that.
I agree.
You know, and the reason we are where we are the preachers. And, you know, and I would say even that, you know, and I think that this is kind of back to our institute. You know, one of the things we're trying to really solidify, not just in our preachers, but in our, you know, the flock as a whole, is to be solid on that. And I think one of the things that, you know, I think of all the great movements that Christ has done throughout the ages, and obviously Christ, look, I don't doubt for a second that Christ was involved in the revivalist movements of the late 19th century and, mm-hmm. and all those things. And but there is a natural tendency in man to want to consolidate. Okay, you know, Nimrod, Babel, whatever it is.
Yeah,
and I think that even goes into our Christian denominations.
And the only way to do that is some of them got to give up something
that's
they believe
that's exactly
in order
right.
for everyone to get along.
That's exactly right. And so whether it's Methodist, Presbyterian, you name the movement, at some point they probably have some sort of higher education of some sort. And so everybody who's, and you've nailed it with the, you don't go to the highest. If you're going to be included, you have to drop it low enough for everybody to get in the door. And so a lot of times I think these higher institutions, they become virus centers. So the apostasy starts there. And then those pastors go out from there. And so that,
so let's put it
huge.
On the bottom shelf. You're at a church and a group gets up to sing some crazy contemporary with rock, you know, I mean, rock beat and they're gyrating. Isn't the pastor responsible for that? Isn't that on him?
I believe so. Yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can think of the early when Victory first started, we were growing. You know, it was good days. You know, we always go on. There were 40 people Sunday morning, 40 people Sunday night, 40 people Wednesday night, 40 people soul winning. And I remember I don't know if you remember, there was a song. I don't remember who sang it. El Shaddai was the name of the song. Whoever the singer was, but it was not, you know, something that we would deem as a sacred hymn of any sort. And a new couple, brand new couple, just been saved, young couple, you know, excited, involved, and they get up and they sing this. And Pastor Dawson, and it was a little awkward, but he had to get up and he said, "Hey, folks, that is not a song we're going to support. We don't support this type of music and the people who sing these types of music and what this represents." And it was an awkward moment.
Yeah.
But he is as the bishop. That was what he did the right thing. That's what he should have done.
When I one church that I pastored, I usually had a rule. No, we called it canned music.
Yes, sir.
That's where you play a tape and you sing to it. There's almost nothing out there you can buy that's decent. If you're going to buy tapes,
then
I mean, right away you got a bead in there, you got drums, and then there's people singing on that in the back. Who are them people?
Yeah.
They might be Mormons or something. Yes. So they're singing in your church.
Yes, sir.
And the pastors, it's you got to have a backbone. It's tough.
Yeah.
I understand. I pastored three times. I know exactly the battles
not
that
easy.
I had to fight.
Because you love those people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not like you're not trying to hurt
and
anybody.
I think love's one of the things that gets in the way for us.
That's,
we love, and so we don't want to hurt them.
Yes.
But we're hurting them by not standing for what's right and providing the right atmosphere.
Yes.
And that's what it is, it's an atmosphere.
Yeah. And keeping wolves out.
Yeah.
That's what you've got to do.
So,
you know,
the pastor definitely has a big part. He's the one who must answer for your soul. I believe he's responsible for all the music. I think he's responsible for the preaching. And I did a series recently. We do a live stream here now. And I did a series, The Most Important Thing, The Greatest Need of America is what I called it. And I asked people to throw out some things. You know, what do you think in revival? You know, they named some good things.
Right, right.
But I said, those are all good things. But no, the great need of America is preaching.
Yes, amen.
Preaching. Preaching will solve most of your church problems.
Yeah.
And that's the difference in a guy who knows how to pastor
right.
and a guy who's just filling the pulpit
right.
and speaking and teaching.
Right.
Preaching will change people's lives.
Yeah.
It'll help them get on the right path. It'll warn them about sin. It'll warn them about adultery,
yeah.
immodesty, all these touchy issues. Preaching's what's
needed.
That's
what deals with it, yes, sir.
And that's the pastor and his staff,
yes,
which
sir.
Leads me to my last thing here. How important, we know the pastor's the most important part of this thing. Keep the thing going the right direction. What about how important is your job as an assistant and Brother Cotton, you know, others on your staff there? How important are you guys to the equation?
I mean, I would say very important. Obviously, it's a, you know, we're trying to, my goal has always been, you know, what would Pastor want out of this? What would Pastor do? You know, I want to keep the direction the same. But the reality is, you know, As humans, you're only able to really impact a limited number of people, and so you know as assistant pastors, we kind of see ourselves as okay, we're standing.
You're one of his arms.
Exactly. There you go. So we are reinforcing, maybe a little more so on the individual level, perhaps. You know. Because our church has had kind of an interesting transition. So when Pastor Auger took over, because I'd been there, Pastor Dawson asked me to stay on as assistant pastor. I probably would have went with him if he would have asked me to go. But he wanted me to stay. And one of the wise things because of this is because there were a lot of people who loved Brother Dawson. And so anytime Pastor Auger may have done something that, well, Brother Dawson wouldn't have done that, I was able to, as a product of Brother Dawson, if I'm going to stand with Pastor Auger and if I'm going to move in the direction that he feels the church ought to go, there's nothing really for them to say.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, so that was a big part that I, big role that I played.
I give this illustration how important the staff is. If you're sitting in the audience and you're an assistant pastor, and your wife's in a miniskirt, that will hurt your pastor.
Yes, sir.
You and your family have to represent his beliefs,
yes, sir,
his moral values.
Yes, sir.
It's like Aaron and Hur holding up,
yes,
the hands,
sir,
of Moses. Without Aaron and Hur,
yes, sir,
Moses couldn't have done what he did. Boy, good,
yes,
stuff.
Yes,
hey,
sir.
Brother Tony, thanks for coming in today.
This has been
good. I think this is going to help people.
Oh, praise the Lord.
Thanks so
praise
much.
Folks,
I hope you enjoyed that. And we're going to have another show next week, I think, on this same topic. And don't miss that. And okay, until next time, keep your eyes on them skies.